What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Everyone, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters. I'm your host, Dr. Sheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author, lecturer. I have another radio show on this very network every Sunday at 4 p.m. called The Women's Healing Circle, and it's pretty obvious I am passionate about getting truthful information out there to all women. And, of course, men are most welcome to listen in because the information that I share is also relevant to men. And this is all about creating opportunities to have in-depth explorations and conversations into subjects that we really all must know. I have a few announcements. First of all, I have a great website, whatwomenmustknow.com. If you've not yet had a chance to visit, I invite you to do so. You can just opt in there. Just put your name and email address, and you'll get my ongoing special reports. I have one coming up very soon. You'll also get other announcements of various programs that I am facilitating. And if you go to the section with all my articles, you'll see a whole slew of articles, published articles that I have written on a variety of topics relating to women's health and other relevant issues, not just only women's health. So it's a great resource place to go get truthful information so you can make the most informed decision possible regarding your health. That's really what it's all about. I also want to let everyone know in the New York metropolitan area that it's all happening again twice a year. I venture into the Big Apple, and I will be back. I come in the spring, and I come again in the fall. So in this spring, I'll be in the city at speaking, actually doing a 3-hour seminar at the Natural Gourmet Institute on Saturday, May 7th from 2 to 5. If you just contact the Natural Gourmet Institute in Manhattan, you can get all the details or check them out online, naturalgourmetinstitute.com, I believe. And it's called Getting Your Hormones Back on Track, and it's a fantastic afternoon, a lot of not only in-depth information, getting to the root cause behind hormonal imbalances, but as always, I have some more new exciting information. Life is always this journey of unfolding and learning and finding more solutions to the many challenges. I often have to be my own guinea pig as things occur in my body, and then I seek out solutions and share them. So I'm really excited because I've got more information than ever before to address all of the underlying issues that we are being faced with. And just as we move into our wise women years, the things that we need to do to really ensure we have optimal health and well-being. So that's May 7th, Saturday, May 7th at the Natural Gourmet Institute. By the way, if anyone is listening or if you have any relatives, friends up in the Boston area, I will also be speaking Friday night, the 13th, and doing an event on the afternoon on Saturday the 14th in Boston. And the best place to go to get information on that is frankieboyer.com. She is my co-author of my latest book called The Promise of HCG, and she is also a very popular radio host up in Boston and is hosting these 2 days of spectacular events. So we're talking about the missing pieces of the weight loss puzzle and also turning back the clock, how to get younger and healthier as we get older, two really fascinating topics. And that's going to be in Boston on Friday, May 13th and Saturday, May 14th. And go to frankieboyer.com and there'll be more information there, and you can contact Frankie for more of the specifics. And if anyone is listening all the way over in Australia, in June and July, I make a pilgrimage back to Australia. I have numerous conferences and events and lectures that I'll be doing there. And you just need to be sure to opt into my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because I'll be sending out announcements of all the events happening down under in Australia. So, okay, I think that covers all those important announcements. What we're going to be talking about today is, actually, we're going to talk about a couple of things with my guest. My guest is Dr. Howard Davis, and we're going to be exploring the world of homeopathy. So, first of all, we're going to be investigating what is homeopathy. I know most people have heard about it. It's something really difficult for us in the West to wrap our head around for some reason, even though this is a common modality used throughout Europe. I was first exposed to homeopathy many decades ago in India, where it is also a very popular healing modality. And for some reason, even though it is available here, people just don't seem to understand what it does and why it works in such a superb way. So we're going to be talking about the healing art of homeopathy, and we're also going to be talking about some specific applications of it, including homeopathic oxytocin, which has been in the news lately. We'll talk about that, what the news is saying about oxytocin. And if you don't know what oxytocin is, then you really want to stick around. It's the love hormone. We'll be talking about that. And to help us understand this is my guest today, Dr. Howard Davis, who has been involved in the research and study of natural health for over 40 years. He has conducted in-depth research in the health field his entire adult life and has studied all areas of health, including homeopathy, nutrition, herbs, chiropractic, and holistic therapies. By incorporating his understanding of the human body with his knowledge of the effects of the chemical and nutrient effects, he has been able to develop products that are safe and highly effective. He is a fascinating man, and it's my pleasure to welcome him to the show. So welcome, Dr. Davis.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It is a pleasure. Your entire adult life, that's a pretty good use of your life to be investigating an area that I think
decided,
is so important.
I decided years ago that whatever I learned, it had to be of practical nature so it could be translated into something that would be practical for other people to use in their life to benefit people in some way. No matter what research I get into, whether it's nutrition or even outside of nutrition, it has to translate into something beneficial for people.
You know, whenever I think back about the decision I made to get into the area of holistic healing, and I'm a naturopath, uh-huh. and I started out as a psychotherapist, a mind-body approach, I'm so grateful because, you know, there is nothing more important than looking after our health and protecting our health. I mean, nothing else
yes.
really functions if we don't have optimal health. So to have access to the knowledge I have and then to people like yourself makes me feel so blessed, because it's like finding answers for just about any issue that people could be addressing in their lives. You know, we may not have the entire answer, but we certainly have some key components of it.
That's the way to put it. Excellent.
You know? Excellent. So so what did you first study in your lifelong pursuit? What was your first modality?
Well, it was actually chiropractic. And I developed a technique to adjust the atlas. Over 427 trillion nerve fibers go through that first vertebra, second vertebra, the axis. And I found that any nerve impingement there can cause negativity in the body above or below. We have an afferent and efferent current going through those fine nerve fibers. Some of them are so tiny you can't even segregate them, look at them under a microscope. And that's what really got me started. I studied B.J. Palmer. He focused on the atlas and so on and the nerves and how it can affect the body. And so for every brain cell, we have a tissue cell. And those nerves are all important, and they should be free of impingement. So I got into that, and then before that I was studying nutrition, and it just expanded into a wide field
really
of anything that relates to human health. That was my goal there.
You know, I just want to say that I have been working with chiropractors for almost 30 years. I consider chiropractic part of my foundational support program. And, you know, to be honest, I don't know how people can remain healthy if they do not get regular chiropractic adjustment.
That's absolutely correct, because the Gray's Anatomy says the nervous system controls all other systems in the human body, and it's very, very important that people realize that.
And because people think that chiropractic, you go to a chiropractor if you put your back out, and I try to really, you know, kind of shift their thinking is you go to a chiropractor to maintain your vital flow of energies.
Absolutely.
So you don't have to put your back out. It's a
preventive
model.
Absolutely. So that's why I focused on the Atlas, admittedly, and the technique that I use when you adjust the Atlas, the hips level, and scoliosis temporarily leaves until, of course, the person becomes maladjusted in some way, stepping off a curb or whatever. But as long as that Atlas is in place, that spine is fairly straight and the hips are level, and all these pressures that being out of adjustment or out of alignment cause dissipate. And as a result, you have more energy and more expression in the body, and that affects your hormones, that affects your nutrition, how you digest food. Everything is prolapsus and contraction, and once again, it relates back to the nervous system again. So the nervous system is all important, and I sort of start there. I don't neglect anything else like nutrition and exercise and all the rest. It's just that that's very important, and I know you realize that, of course, and you've expressed that on your shows, that chiropractic is very, very important to keep those pathways open.
Yes, I really wish that all people would find a chiropractor. There's so many different modalities. Finding someone that kind of you relate to and has an approach that, you know, resonates with you and really make that investment. It's one of the best investments. You know, I don't want to stay too much in chiropractic because we have other things to talk about, but I have a friend whose husband is a chiropractor, and in her 20s, she was diagnosed with degeneration of her spine. I guess it's the upper area of her spine, cervical or something. And so she's had regular chiropractic care, and when she had her x-rays done when she was in her 50s, it's gone. It's gone.
Yeah.
This, you know, it's pretty miraculous. But
absolutely.
I mean, it sounds miraculous, but when you understand what the basis of chiropractic is and how it restores the flow of these energies, anything can be healed when that happens.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about homeopathy. You know, homeopathy, I find, and it seems to be one of those areas that you're developing products in and working with. It's a fascinating area. It's such a powerful healing modality. I think it's gaining in momentum as far as its acknowledgement and appreciation. I think MD Anderson has just approved a homeopathic formula for some of their treatments. But people just don't know what it is, and it's such a challenging thing to explain it to people. So can you give us your explanation of what is homeopathic medicine?
Well, Dr. Hahnemann, of course, discovered homeopathy, and simplistically speaking, it means same suffering. The same modality or the same element that makes one sick would make a sick person well. For example, they will take 50 healthy volunteers. They've been checked medically. They're very healthy, and they're given a certain ingredient or a certain remedy. And over time, they will note all the symptoms, the negative symptomatology that arises from taking that particular remedy from head to foot. And when someone comes into a homeopathic office, the homeopathist sits there, and they try to match that set of symptoms that was found in a healthy volunteer taking a certain remedy. It could be any number of things, a mineral, a plant extract, or whatever it might have been that caused that set of symptoms. And when he matches or she matches that remedy with that person's symptomatology, then the immune system is stimulated and it begins to react, and then the various chemicals and the various areas of the nervous system, and the immune system began to heal that person. And sometimes it's a very long process, and sometimes it isn't. It just depends on how complex that person's symptomatology is. So people complain about homeopathy, say, well, the ingredients in there, the elements, are so small. But people don't stop and realize that we have hormones in our body that are less than a trillionth of a gram in size. So the body itself creates microscopic hormones and other chemicals and uses them to maintain our metabolism, our body, our digestion, all of the things that we are used to experiencing as a human being in our bodies. And this is all done from microscopic elements in the body. And homeopathy is really copying what the body does. It's used to the microscopic, it creates the microscopic, and homeopathy does the same thing. This is why you don't have negative side effects in homeopathy. You have a retrace, what I call a retrace of old symptomatology, but that's good because the body is becoming more aware that this area needs healing because you've stimulated it in a natural way, bringing it to balance so that the body can send out the proper response for healing. So homeopathy is really a scientific base because they have maybe tested 1,000 or more volunteers using a certain plant extract or whatever it might be, and it causes a certain set of symptoms. And when a sick person comes in with those same symptoms that were generated in a healthy person, then the homeopathist is very confident, as long as the person cooperates and the right remedy is selected that causes those negative symptoms in a healthy volunteer to get well. So it's really an amazing system, and when you don't understand it, then it is subject to ridicule, the microscopic factor, or when it gets past 12C potency or 24X potency, then you're talking about energy, and that's something that people can't understand, yet their nervous system conveys energy, and it's something that can be measured. But when you take away the nerve fiber, you can't see that energy, but it's very real, and the cells respond to it. So it is with homeopathy. You're encapsulating energy that has a certain pattern that the body responds to. Hahnemann himself was taking quinine, and quinine is used for malaria and malaria-like symptoms. And he developed all the symptomatology of malaria. So he reasoned that if he gave quinine, especially in a very tiny dose over time, he worked this out so the body would not be overwhelmed as it was in heroic medicine during his day. He would give that remedy to them, and their body would respond and get well. So that's basically how it all got started.
You know, we even though we live in a quantum universe, and that's where, you know, science is even beyond the quantum model, but when it comes to understanding how our body works and also how medicine works or healing modalities work, we're still stuck in a Newtonian age where we think we have to use gross substances with all the side effects, which, of course, that's what medication is, to elicit a response or to alter the physiology in such a way to get a response and not necessarily healing. Not, you know, rarely do drugs heal the body. They just alter the response physiologically. And yet homeopathy, which is really 21st century medicine, even though it was developed 200 years ago, it really is 21st century medicine because we're dealing with the quantum world of energies and frequencies. But you know, that just needs explaining for some people. And and especially the the FDA.
Of course. They don't understand it, you know. But like I say, the body itself is used to creating the microscopic and the unseen. We take a bodybuilder, and he holds up this giant health shake, and he drinks it down. And he's very macro-oriented. He doesn't understand the micro in nutrition, and so he drinks his heavy shake down. But he doesn't realize within 3 to 4 hours those nutrients are at the protein bond level to be taken in by the cells, which in turn are microscopic, cannot be seen individually with the naked eye, and neither can these particles of nutrition that were taken from that huge, thick shake. So the body itself takes something that's macro and turns it into micro, because that's where we're coming from when we discuss the cellular size. It's very, very, very tiny, microscopic. And so homeopathy starts there. It's duplicating and copying the body. Whenever you copy nature, you're on the right track. If your premise is wrong, your conclusion will be wrong. If your premise is correct, your conclusion will be correct. And so Hahnemann had the correct premise, and so it led him to the correct conclusions. And it was a process, and he had to find that by shaking or succussing each remedy, it brought out its energetic factors more strongly. And so by wrapping a remedy, a liquid remedy, on his Bible, actually, he would wrap the remedy maybe 50 to 100 times. He found that it had more energetic effect in the body, worked faster, better, deeper, and so on. And they've been finding this out now, that there is a lot to the succussion process. There was an article I read many years ago in 1987, San Francisco Chronicle. A scientist had read about homeopathy, and they got a chemical, and they put the chemical into a large beaker of water. And they diluted the chemical a few times, and they would shake it just like they'd heard about what was done in homeopathy, succussion. This is a drop shake. This is not a martini shake, and there's a difference. And they found that the chemical bonds were actually, in this chemical that was in the water, got stronger and tighter and firmer, as it were. Instead of spreading apart, they became tighter and stronger. Then they decided to take two test fields at the university. They had some crops that were growing. They would test various kinds of fertilizer for these different large companies. And so they got the fertilizer, and they made it the same way they made the potion for the test on the chemical. And they reasoned that the chemical bonds of the fertilizer, even though it's being diluted and shaken, it would get stronger and stronger, just like they had seen with the other chemical. And so nitric oxide is what they used. So then they used the regular solution of chemical fertilizer. And they sprayed one field with the regular fertilizer in concentrated form, and then they sprayed the other field with the so-called homeopathic version. The homeopathic version caused the crops to really prosper well. They were really amazed at how deep green they were, how fast the plants grew. The other crop was growing very slowly, did not have the same vivid color. The appearance was just not the same as the homeopathic test field. And they just couldn't figure that out. I mean, they saw the chemical bonds getting stronger when they shook the product and with each dilution of the product. But they just couldn't understand that. And once again, it has to do with your thinking. You have to think micro. Everything around us, since we were children, we've seen the macro. And so it is very hard. We obtained a microscope when we were small, young child growing up. We looked at things, and everything was expanded in the microscope. The higher the magnification, the more we could see the object, and we kind of understood that. But when it comes to homeopathy, people seem to lay that aside, and they just can't understand how it works. And these scientists were still at a loss to explain that.
Yes, you know, it's so fascinating. I if nothing else, people should explore it. And one of the ways is just get a little first aid kit. You know, I love those little first aid kits, because whenever I get any kind of bruise, you know, I take my homeopathic arnica. They're just simple little things that people can use in their medicine cabinet that will rapidly support the body in healing. And, you know, we're going to talk about some of the other things, but that's just a really simple, basic way to incorporate homeopathic remedies into your life.
Absolutely. There again, there's the practical, practical use of homeopathy.
So there are lots of ways to apply homeopathy. As you were saying, you can use it long-term, and really work with the constitutional remedies which go in. And, well, maybe you can explain a constitutional remedy compared to other approaches of homeopathy.
Yeah. There are no two metabolisms alike. There's no two leaves on a tree alike, no two sunsets alike, no two fingerprints alike. Infinite differentiation, they call that. And that is a really an amazing phenomenon. But it's the same with the human being and their individual constitution. When the homeopathist takes their set of symptoms, many times he or she is looking for the unusual. Maybe this person does not like beans, or maybe at 3 o'clock in the morning they have a severe headache. It lasts for a half hour and then goes away. That sort of thing, anything that's unusual. And they come up with what they consider a constitutional remedy, remedy that is good for that person's constitution. And many of the remedies are multidynamic and multifaceted, many alkaloids and minerals and so forth. You mentioned arnica that has iron in it, and of course iron is very good for bruising and all of that. But they're trying to match up with that person's basic constitution, a remedy that has been known to help them. And that becomes their constitutional remedy, like calcium phosphate, what they call calcare phosphate, is very, very good for me. Maybe somebody else, that would not be their constitutional remedy. And it's just something that is noted in homeopathy. And then, of course, sometimes a person is greatly benefited by that remedy, and most of the symptomatology over time goes away. And I think that that is really an amazing phenomenon, and I've seen it many, many times.
So we're going to talk more about some specific applications of homeopathy. We're going to also be talking about homeopathic oxytocin, which is the love hormone, and we're going to be sharing some of the reports in the news and why this is such a phenomenal hormone and why a homeopathic version would probably be even better. So we're going to take a little break. Don't go away. I've been talking to Dr. Howard Davis. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Are you asking questions about the fate of our planet, your spiritual direction, and how to find meaning in a fast-paced society? Voices of Wisdom with John Jeanette is here to answer those questions and more. Tune in every Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear sacred activists and teachers exploring the meaning of contemporary culture. The show is produced by Wisdom University with regular commentary by Jim Garrison and Will Tagle. I'm your host, John Jeanette, and I look forward to your questions.
With Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
Calling all women. Are you looking for truthful answers to help you safely and naturally navigate the many hormonal challenges that you face during your lifetime? This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author, psychotherapist, writer, and women's health advocate. Join me entering into the Women's Healing Circle, a weekly call-in show with the holistic practitioners, authors, researchers, and wise elders who share truthful information, education, and wisdom. Join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to enter the Women's Healing Circle right here on Progressive Radio Network.
Join us, Bruce and Marianne Curtis, Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network for Truth and Freedom. We present provocative conversations with the world's most brilliant minds in the areas of holistic health, spiritual wisdom, politics, and a host of other topics. Some of our topics include the latest work in non-invasive therapy on the brain, the truth beneath the global economic meltdown, healing power of the breath, and the sublime truth beyond all religious traditions. In this age of transformation, we need to look beneath the surface appearance of things to see the underlying reality. From material that is always illuminating and often liberating, tune in to Truth and Freedom on the Progressive Radio Network Fridays at 3 p.m.
The most news anywhere on the internet. Go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, your number one source for everything progressive.
Well, I'm glad you're back with us. This is Dr. Cheryl Spellman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and I have a fascinating guest today, Dr. Howard Davis, who has been in the area of holistic health for the past 40 years, has been researching and putting a variety of products together. He has a wealth of knowledge, and we're talking about homeopathy, and we're going to start talking about a very fascinating hormone and how it is used to support us in so many ways. And it's a hormone you probably have never heard of before or don't know much about. It's called oxytocin. And oxytocin has actually even been in the news. I was amazed maybe a week or two ago I heard my NPR station have a story about oxytocin. So, Dr. Davis, what is oxytocin?
Well, in the body, it's a composition of 9 amino acids. And just like a growth hormone is 191 amino acids, it performs certain functions in the body. Generally, women have much more oxytocin than do men, and that can create a difference and a wedge concerning that difference, or it can also be a source of understanding and deeper bonding. So it is something that helps in the birth process. Oxytocin means quick birth. It helps to work with the smooth muscles and nervous system in speeding up the birth of the child. And today we're finding out more and more about what it does, even in autism, fibromyalgia, the pain associated with fibromyalgia, drug addiction. Just been fascinated with all of the things that I'm finding out about oxytocin over the years.
You know, the story that I heard about oxytocin was how people with pets, did you see this story or come across it? People with, go ahead.
Yo, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so the story was that people with pets who had pets, and so they were petting pets a lot, like their dogs and cats, actually had higher levels of oxytocin. So having a pet, you know, raises your oxytocin levels. And being the love or bonding hormone, it has therapeutic effects for people personally and socially as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So do you have any comments about that study or what you've seen with oxytocin and why it's getting all this attention right now?
Well, talking about animals, they've taken certain species of prairie dogs, and those prairie dogs that had low oxytocin levels were the ones that were more apt to just create a litter and leave. Those species of prairie dogs that had higher levels of oxytocin, they bonded, and some for life. And the same in the bird, the world of birds. Birds that have high amounts of oxytocin tend to stay together for life. So it is a bonding hormone. It does excite the nervous system to want to feel, to make contact, to touch, and to get close to someone. Or in the case of animals, it's the same thing in the animal world. So it is something that is quite a phenomenon. When we were children, we rolled on the ground. When we first learned to walk, we would fall down and we would crawl for a while. And we'd brush up against things and press against things. And people were always holding us and cuddling us. And when we got older, we were still maybe climbing trees and doing different things. And as we got older, we became more and more detached from contact. And that automatically starts the oxytocin levels, which are high in females, granted, and lower in males, to drop even further, though. And in some cases, it affects some people more than others, to the point where a person can become very shy, withdrawn, what we call antisocial, because they just don't have the proper amount of oxytocin to excite the nervous system, to excite the serotonin and dopamine levels, to want to connect with people and get that happiness and that contentment and that joy and that inner relationship that normal human beings crave. So by studying the animals, we learn a lot about oxytocin. And when we see people that are withdrawn or detached from others, many times they have very low oxytocin levels. And the males are more susceptible than the female.
You know, a couple of things I just want to comment. I knew about oxytocin because it's very involved with birthing, and it does facilitate bonding at birth. Mm-hmm. But I recently had John Gray on my radio show, and I actually attended a retreat.
I met him. Uh-huh.
And John is really into oxytocin because he believes that, first of all, women in our modern world live a very male focused life. So the traditional ways where women would get together and share and network and have their knitting clubs and all these ways that women would behave in a manner that would stimulate the production of oxytocin. So they had greater sense of well-being and bondedness, and therefore a lot healthier and happier. But in our in our modern world, as women go to work and enter into the male competitive a model, that we actually do not get nourished and we do not produce oxytocin, so it creates a lot of depression and frustration in women. So
that's correct.
So that, you know, that was fascinating to me because I deal with women. I understand what that's about. We do get so involved in this warlike culture of corporate world, right? So so John was talking about some of his experiences with the hormone oxytocin. And then the second point I want to make is when I attended the Anti-Aging Society conference in December, I met a doctor. We just had a conversation. He's a very bright doctor. And he told me that he takes oxytocin because he has Asperger's syndrome. And his natural tendency is to be withdrawn and not very sociable. So when he takes oxytocin, and he takes the hormone as well, he finds he can be very sociable and get out there and interact with people and be really comfortable and kind of normal.
I've
and
noticed
that was
that
fascinating.
In people,
I had not heard of that approach. So, so I have gotten so interested in this hormone oxytocin and its applications, and up until recently, the only way I knew it was available was in the form of a hormone by prescription and very expensive.
Yes.
And that's how I met you, because you provide another alternative for using oxytocin in a homeopathic format and get similar results. So can you share a bit more about why you developed oxytocin, what you see happening, the homeopathic use of it? Just kind of fill us in.
Sure. What you want to do when someone has low levels of, say, oxytocin, you want to give them external ways and internal ways to stimulate the oxytocin. But many people, even though they do touch and feel and they make contact and so forth, there could be other reasons why their oxytocin levels are low. They can suffer from depression and so on. It depends on their psychology background. There's just a number of things, the stressors in their job, their marriages, and all of the rest. So one of the things that I feel that needs to be done is that we need supplementation today, especially in the Western world, because there's so many stressors, and we could identify a million of them. All of us have noted them over the years. But we need supplementation. And I find that the best supplementation for something like this is a homeopathic version, because homeopathics do not overstimulate. They do not depress. They simply bring the body to homeostasis. So if there is a problem other than maybe the person, like I say, is making physical contact, is interacting socially and so forth, but still has certain symptoms that we now can relate to oxytocin depletion, then we realize that that person may need homeopathic version to bring their normal levels, bring up their normal levels, and to create that homeostasis that all of us are looking for. And so homeopathics do that. They encourage the body to create its own hormones so that the body can not be forced into something, but can be encouraged. We all know that encouraging a child is much better than forcing a child or harming the child in some way or trying to disturb them with fear and all the rest. So homeopathy does the same thing. It's an encourager of the body, and that's why it's becoming more and more popular. People realize that, where drugs are like a bully. They go in and they try to force the symptomatology and deeply suppress it, and as a result, we have severe side effects. Over 100,000 people die each year, according to Yale statistics, Yale Medical School statistics, from drugs. And the body recognizes drugs as a bully. It's a chemical bully. It's trying to force the body to do what it really doesn't want to do. The body wants to be encouraged. We all know that extremes for the body are not good, and the same for medications. So when you bring the oxytocin levels to normal, over time you start seeing changes. And I've seen people before and after they started taking homeopathic version of oxytocin, and they begin changing sometimes in very subtle ways. And it's really remarkable to see that. Maybe before they had more of a tendency to go home and stay home. Now they make a phone call to a friend and say, hey, let's go to the movies tonight, or let's do this, or let's do that. They're more spontaneous, more willing to engage. And so it's just really wonderful to see that. And it doesn't create any side effects. It's a normal process that goes on instead of a chemical push. It's more of a chemical encouragement for the body. And it really is a spectacular thing to behold. And the amounts of the hormone itself are in very tiny microscopic amounts, which the body is used to creating, and the body is used to, via the receptor sites, responding to. So this is another reason why there aren't any side effects, another reason why the body responds so well. And talking about autism, and we can learn a lot from the extremes in nature, including the extremes in personality. This man works with autism and these autistic children. He told me, he said, Howard, you know, I give these kids an injection of oxytocin. It doesn't last that long because it's an injectable. But during that time, they normalize. They look me in the eye. They make eye contact. And one of the things that I discovered was that the retina does create very tiny amounts of oxytocin, as does the liver, the heart, the lungs, and so forth. So the brain creates oxytocin, but other parts of the body do also, sort of similar to growth hormone. The majority of it's created in the brain, but there are some areas where it's created throughout the body. So he found that during that short period of time, the child normalizes, wants to hug him, is cooperative, wants to engage and play with the other children, and then it begins to fade, and they go back to their autistic behaviors. And so oxytocin is a wonderful thing for that. And one of the secrets is it elevates your caliphos. What the homeopathic world calls caliphos is potassium phosphate. And when you have a proper amount of potassium phosphate in the gray nerve fibers, your brain is more aggressive. Shyness dissipates, and you feel more brave, more courageous, more daring. And if you have phobias, or if you feel shy, once you're innervated with the proper amount of Califos or potassium phosphate, and that's one of the ingredients in the formula, then you're more apt to go out and engage the world in a proper way and interrelate to people and look them in the eye and want to communicate and want to associate with other people, just like those autistic kids when they're under the influence temporarily of the oxytocin drug via injection. So from the extremes, we learned that from somebody who isn't autistic, we learned that those kinds of symptomatologies are found in them. They're not in such depth or in such complex that they're considered autistic, but they do have them. They don't look in the eye. They don't want to communicate. They don't want to engage in social activities and that sort of thing. So I love the extremes of life because from that you can learn a great many things. People shy away from extremes, like studying the criminal mind, for example. You can learn a lot, and you can learn what can alleviate it also. So I found that that's a very important thing that it does.
So let me ask you, when the homeopathic oxytocin is used with people who have some degree of autism, somewhere on that spectrum, as it's called, and they use this on a continuous basis, does it support them in being more social on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are small pilot studies going on all over the world about oxytocin and that phenomenon. And I think eventually they're going to find that it does elevate, you know, serotonin. It's going to be a confirmed scientific tenet. And it does elevate dopamine to its proper levels. It helps us absorb our potassium phosphate, and it creates a positive chain reaction. Also, if you have a full complement of growth hormone, then generally speaking, your oxytocin levels will be normal. If your growth hormone is depleted, your oxytocin levels will drop. And I do believe that many of these children have low growth hormone levels. So they almost work hand in hand. And the more I study oxytocin, the more it struck me, because I had studied GH first many years ago, is that they are very similar in some respects. And it's really quite remarkable. And the two work together. When one is low, like the GH, then it can affect the elevation of the other, or oxytocin. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful remedy, and it's something that you can take maybe 5 days a week and knock off on the weekends, let the body process it, and we have been getting great results with it. I know when I first started taking oxytocin, I started noticing the difference within 2 days, and it really is something. There's this one friend of mine, I noticed the difference within her within a week. And it's just really something. And she flies, she flew recently to Texas, and she's becoming more and more outgoing. And it's really just remarkable to see these changes. At first, they're subtle, and then over time, they become more pronounced. And so, once again, in the extreme, when you see an autistic person, you see that change. It is really a contrast. It's like black and white, and it really stands out. And that's another reason why I like the extremes, because you can really view what's going on there.
So it's something that you would take on an ongoing basis, because the longer you take it, the more you find the response, your response changing.
Yes, hereditary factors. Adele Davis found 50 years of nutritional research. Some people needed 1,000 milligrams of magnesium. Another person, their constitution required maybe 200 milligrams, and they could at least get by. So it's the same thing with oxytocin. Some people, by hereditary factors, tend to make less oxytocin, even though they say they're female. And so they may need support. They may need something like a homeopathic oxytocin formula to help bring that oxytocin level to normal. And as a result, they're going to start responding and interacting differently because of its effect on the nervous system and on the various chemical markers like serotonin, dopamine, and so on that elevate mood. When you're in a good mood, then you're more apt to do things that are forward instead of backwards, external instead of internal. So it all works together.
And there are a couple other areas that oxytocin has been used. One of the areas happens to be with seniors, and seniors who tend to be more reclusive, and you know, I see that with my mother and her community. Well, a lot of people just stay in their apartments a lot, you know, and don't really socialize because they have, I guess, low oxytocin levels, right?
Absolutely. And once again, you're looking at an extreme, a person that's maybe 80 years old, let's say, and they're given oxytocin. All of a sudden now they want an animal. They want to go outside and walk. They want to connect with some of the activities that are available that they ignored previously. They get away from the TV set. They're wanting to do housework. So these are the kinds of things that, that connect them to their external environment, including, and most importantly, human beings.
We should put that in water of all seniors' residences.
That's right.
You know, I mean,
the FDA would like to know about that.
You know, I mean, because
you don't get arrested.
When people get to that stage, I mean, they tend to be alone. More the habit is to be alone, but not necessarily happy being alone. They're just just a behavior that comes from this the physiology that's changed, is, you know, as anything else.
Absolutely. Scar tissue accounts for a lot of it. I was the first one to discover that scar tissue in the body can interfere with growth hormone production. It's the same with oxytocin. If you have scar tissue in the brain, in areas of the brain and body where oxytocin is being created, then you'll have less oxytocin. Adele Davis found in autopsies that teenagers, even young soldiers that were killed in the Vietnam War, when they were autopsied, USC, where she was going at the time, they found that there was a lot of scar tissue. And one of the reasons scar tissue forms more readily in people in the Western culture is because of a lack of vitamin E. We don't get enough vitamin E, and that is one of the vitamins that helps us not form scar tissue. And the second one that is the most neglected, and you hardly ever read about it except in a homeopathic book generally about the 12 cell salts, is calcium fluoride. Because calcium fluoride converts to hydrofluoric acid, which in turn can break down scar tissue, even bone spurs and that sort of thing. And it helps keep the tissue elastic and soft and stretchable and all of that. So that's something that, that needs to be considered when a person has low oxytocin, is scar tissue. And so that person should increase their vitamin E intake and also maybe take calcium fluoride at a low potency, say 6X, so it becomes more like just taking a mineral capsule.
So I'm just going to diverge for 2 seconds, talking about the cell salts. Do you believe that we should all be taking then a cell salt, a full
complement
of cell salts on a daily basis?
Oh, absolutely. I've studied the cell salts for many years, and those are the 12 essential minerals, as you know. When the body's broken down to ash, Dr. Schussler, who really focused on the 12 minerals or cell salts, he found that it was those 12 minerals that were the most prominent and survived the burn process. And they're found, those 12 minerals are found in mother's milk, and they're very, very important. Eudora Perry, she studied the 12 cell salts for 60 years, and she found that we can never truly get enough of them. Our body uses them right up. And so they're very, very important. There's a product called Bioplasma, for example. You can take them as a supplement. They melt under the tongue. They're easy and pleasant. I've seen children talk about Caliphos now, which is potassium phosphate, one of the 12 minerals. You give it to a child, and the child's behavior may be erratic and negative and so on. You give it to a child and a low potency, say a 3X, and that child's behavior just turns right around. Because it does work on the mentality in the brain and how the brain operates and functions and works and interrelates with others. So the 12 cell minerals to me are very, very important. I tell people, if you don't want to take anything else, because I have to say, I don't want to take anything, but if you don't take anything else, take those 12 cell salts. They're very important.
And they're inexpensive, readily available.
Absolutely.
Perfect. I mean, actually, homeopathy is inexpensive, which is why I like it. You know,
coming
to the end of the show, I just want you to briefly touch on one other application of oxytocin, and then we're going to let people know how to get in touch with you. But that is in the realm of sexual desire and orgasm, which will definitely get people's attention here.
Yes. Well, oxytocin has been found to heighten the orgasmic response or even awaken it when it had been dormant previously. Many women, if they're deficient, and men too, if they're deficient in oxytocin, it will affect the so-called orgasmic response. The PC muscle is very important in orgasm for females. And if there is not the proper amount of oxytocin stimulation, then, and of course if that muscle is not toned, then they will not have orgasm, or it will be a very faint orgasm, unsatisfactory, not satisfying. And so there's no payoff. And so as a result, frustration can arise and depression and many other things that people don't even relate to that in some cases. So it's very important for sex and sexual interest. And I've seen people, and they've told me that once they started taking oxytocin, males or females, that their interest in sex was awakened. They noticed tremendously enhanced orgasm, which is part of our natural function, and they were very, very amazed, actually. And one of the reasons being is that they were depleted in oxytocin. So that gives that proper response that is needed in lovemaking and in the orgasmic response.
And also, just on that note, it seems to create more of a nurturing lovemaking. So it's
that's correct.
Yeah,
that's
so
correct.
It's,
and that's
it's a
important.
more loving
that's right.
time together.
That's right. And women desire that more than men because they have higher oxytocin. Now, we don't want men to be a carbon copy of women and vice versa. The divergence and the difference and the diversity is one of the exciting factors between male and female relationships. And so what we want is for the female, who has over 200 million more nerves connecting both lateral halves of the brain, and she's up here and he's down here when it comes to relationships. He's more general in his thinking, not apt to talk through things, just wants to get to the problem, the root of the matter. The female wants to talk about what led up to it and all the details, and that creates a gap between the two. And when women talk together, they perfectly understand one another, but the males are like, I don't get it, you know? And so the females have to be more patient and more understanding about that neural connection, that they have over 200 million more nerve fibers connecting both lateral halves. The men don't have that, and that they naturally have higher levels of oxytocin, which encourages bonding and intimacy and hugging, touching, kissing, all of that. A lot of the men are very detached after lovemaking and so forth, and that's one of the reasons for it. They maybe have their oxytocin levels are too low, and there's more testosterone factors there, and it's not counterbalanced. And so the females have to have more understanding about that. I know it's tough because they have much of this, like the neural connections, extra neural connections, and the extra oxytocin, but you know, if they want that reward of a male that is more responsive, then patience will be should be there and exercised, and also this knowledge and understanding of oxytocin, how it works, how their brain works. One neurologist told me that he would always send a male and a female together on a business deal because she invariably picked up things and nuances in the negotiations and in the conferencing that the male missed. He was more into general things. And so they were made to work together, the male and female brain. And the female brain in many areas is superior. And so because of that, though, it gives them greater responsibility and understanding and realizing what the problem is here, why this male in her life is not responding the way she thinks that he should. Now, he'll never be a female, but many men are deficient in this area, and that's the reasons for it, basically, unless there's a lot of trauma and psychology and everything else in their past.
This has been such a fascinating conversation. How can people get hold of you, Dr. Davis? How can they find out where to get some homeopathic oxytocin or to learn more about it?
Yeah, just go to dreamus.com, dreamous.com, dreamus.com, and you'll view our website. We have oxytocin there, and we have many other products. We have a majority of them are homeopathic, and we have homeopathic skincare, world's first, and they're cold processed. Nobody else does that to protect the ingredients. All of our products are very unique. But once again, our goal is to assist others in gaining good health and well-being. And as a result, it makes for a better world in our communities and cities and relationships. So that's been our major goal.
And that's www.dreamus.com. Yeah.
O-U-S. Dream Us, like famous, only it's Dream Us. O-U-S.
You know, this has been such a fascinating conversation. I really want to thank you for your time and for your expertise and wisdom. It's been great, and I'm sure people have learned a lot. And I hopefully people will try some homeopathic oxytocin. I think it's a fantastic support for all of us in living a higher quality life.
I agree.
Okay, thank you. And here we are at the end of another show. Would you believe it? I really want to thank all of you for listening. My wonderful guest today is Dr. Howard Davis, and we've been talking about oxytocin. This is What Women Must Know, and as always, remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.